and welcome to the 18th installment of our podcast series, The Workforce Lens, brought to you by Tarrant County College in North Texas. I am Shannon Bryant, Executive Vice President for Corporate Solutions and Economic Development, and I will be your host, moderating strategic conversations with employers and economic developers on all things related to preparing and growing the workforce today and the future. Today, please help me welcome my guest, Michael Yorba. Michael is the chairman and CEO of Advanced Community Fund, a mission-driven nonprofit organization developed with the primary focus of alleviating poverty and transforming distressed neighborhoods by working with leaders, residents, businesses, and government organizations. Welcome, Michael, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Shannon. Thanks for having me.
It's wonderful to have you. So, Michael, you and I met maybe about 6 months ago at a North Texas Commission meeting, and your story was fascinating to me, so I'm really happy to have you here today. You have quite the story. After researching you a bit, it tells me that you have been everything from a professional cowboy to a swordfish harpooner to chairman and CEO of Advanced Community Fund, which I'm anxious to learn a lot about, as well as CEO of WFN1.com and host of CEO Money Mod podcast. Dissect those roles for us and tell us about your journey, if you will.
Okay, thanks. Where would you like to start?
From the beginning. Let's start from the beginning. Tell us how you got here and your journey along the way.
Well, I had been a futures broker and trader since 1980, and I thought I'd take a little break and moved up to Nevada. And anyway, migrated out to the Indian reservations and just wanted to take some time off and ended up being a cowboy for 17 years. And I really enjoyed that. Not a good retirement plan, but a nice lifestyle. So I happened to meet an Indian out on the Indian reservation, and we decided that we would come to Dallas. And once we got here, just the world opened up. Within a year, we had our own television and radio shows and found a wonderful place out in the country on our little ranch for ourselves. And life was moving along great. My wife subsequently died, and an old buddy of hers asked me if I would come in and be the chairman of this emerging CDFI, Community Development Financial Institution. And I drugged my heels, and they finally said, "So what's your legacy?" And I was like, "Okay, now you got me." So I opted in, and they kind of threw a 7.5-inch thick operations manual at me and said, "Here, figure it out." Oh, okay. So about a month in, after the press release went out and I announced it on my show, they got fired and I had to figure it out all by myself. So I saw the scalability of the issues and the solutions through this CDFI lens, and I thought that this is something that can help every city in America. Let's just build a template in Dallas. So I began the work to put together the infrastructure of Advanced Community Fund about 5 years on a volunteer basis. Does that bring you up to speed?
It does. And then if we can move in, let's talk about the Advanced Community Fund.
Well, the Advanced Community Fund is focused on changing the environment that the lower to moderate income areas have throughout Dallas. Turns out it's 55% of the land mass. About 3 million people are affected. And I had to come up with something that really made an impact. Part of the checklist when you report back to the Department of Treasury for our designation is community impact. And 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 affordable houses, maybe you'll help 5 people per house, but you need a larger impact in order to really make a change for the better. So I invented a template. And the template is to go into high crime rate areas that are also synonymous with high poverty rate, bring in a medical center. We're on our second one now. The first one's doing about 200 patients a day, and they look to get it up to about 500 patients a day. But in this medical center template, The bottom floor is doctors, the top floor are dentists. And then we developed relationships with the city. They've asked me to be their bridge. What that means is when they have a problem with the capital stack, something they've been trying to fund, they come to me. I put private and public partnerships together, develop the capital stack, and then go help assemble the development team. But getting back to the template, I've got to meet the land bank, land transfer division, Department of Economic Development, city attorney's office, and utilities. So I wanted to utilize the tools they gave me. I go around the backside of the neighborhood where the medical center is located, and I work with the land bank. So they repossess properties that have not been maintained through their taxes. They're delinquent on their taxes. But if you can come in under a 501c3 process, you get steep discounts on those properties. Example, market rate could be as high as $75,000. We can pick them up for as low as $1,000. I pass that discount on to the local police department. And then they're having their own problems, and one of which is when these people that move here from the defund me cities and come out of the academy, they don't have a place to go live versus, you know, and that they would own. So I put them into lower to moderate income housing, $180,000, $220,000 house, and then walk through the rest of the first responders so that you have fire, police, paramedic, and teachers in these neighborhoods to get them established, and also it reduces the crime rate. Once that crime rate flattens out, then I bring in a grocery store in that community. And then the last piece is to bring in a child care center. So that's a template that works in every voting district. My really area of operation, they call it a census tract, is Dallas County, but I focus on districts 1, 3, 4, 5, 7, and 8, Fair Park and everything south of 30. So that template is what we're working on to bring forward a change in the complexion of the general geographic area. Does that help?
It does. Very strategic. So tell me a little bit, how is this, how did you come to this template and how is it working currently?
I went to town halls that the chief of police has been putting on. I spoke to the city council members that live in these districts of high crime rate and asked them what was the one thing, if they could have anything in the world for their constituency group, what would it be? And so they fired off real easy. Number one, we've got food deserts. We've got medical deserts. You know, we have low unemployment. And we have an issue with education, financial education. In other words, this is what you have to go through to buy a house. This is how you leverage a bank to start a business, and so on. And so I took their pain points and found a common sense way to go in and create a capitalist solution to a social issue.
So what kind of results are you receiving thus far? When did you get started and where are we now with the process of achievements, metrics?
Well, we're picking up a lot of speed right now. When I got started, it was 5 years ago and there was nothing there. So I had to build in an infrastructure of boards, governing board, advisory board, and a community advisory board. That's key. Those are people that live in the community where we deploy assets, medical center, grocery store, child care center, and also work in those areas. And as it turns out, those people really are the conduit to the other influencers in the area, whether it's faith-based or not, to be able to find out what the problems are. And then, as it turns out, they, on my board, are civically minded. I have a woman, Hilda, that has got just about every politician that's in these areas elected, and she marched with Martin Luther King back in the 60s. I have another guy, Chairman Jazz. He is on the Planning Commission, and he's also on, aside from the Planning Commission, there is a master plan task force, and he is chairman of that. So they keep me apprised of where the city has pain points, and then be able to bring in where the community has pain points and find those bridges.
I love the model because it's really going from the grassroots level of really learning from those people who are there and live and breathe every day. So it's fascinating. And you're only doing this in Dallas currently, correct?
Yes, but the template is scaled to move to other cities, Houston, Miami, LA, New York, any place that has poverty and banks, this template will work.
Is there any initiative underway in Tarrant County currently?
Nobody's tried, but we just haven't met anybody.
Okay, well, we'll have to see what we can do to have some conversations.
Cool.
So, wonderful. Well, that's a fascinating project, and I'm looking forward to seeing more of those results and see how that process goes along the way and make more connections for you here in Tarrant County. So if we could, Michael, let's transition a bit. So you have a great entrepreneurial spirit, and seems like you've done a lot of inspiring things throughout your career and your life. And that same spirit is very much alive here in North Texas, especially here in the Fort Worth Tarrant County area. We're doing a lot in entrepreneurship. And you seem to be a serial entrepreneur. So tell us, what drives you? What are some of the lessons that you've learned along the way?
You have to feel good in the morning. You have to have a passion for what you're going to do when you leave the house. And that is primary. The secondary part is if you're working and you're helping your fellow man and both of you are prospering because of these mutual efforts, it's a far better place to live. There's no need to get more complicated than that.
Mic drop. Agreed. So I'm curious to know from your perspective, you've been here in North Texas for quite some time. What changes have you seen over the years? And I guess, what are the positives? What are you seeing as some of the challenges?
The positives are the natural flow of hospitality, whether it comes to personal or business in this area. It's so welcoming. You can go into any other area that I've been, Hollywood, San Francisco, Reno, Vegas. I've been in a few other places, and you can only get so far before the good old boy network says, that's far enough, son. But here, you can go all the way to the top of the food chain just by doing the right thing and being authentic. If that is your mantra and moving forward, you are well accepted. There's no place else I could show up virtually no money, and within a year have my own television show and a 530-acre ranch. I mean, you can't do that anywhere else. The downside is everybody else has found out about it, and they are coming here in droves. But I don't see that as much of a negative as I do as a positive, because that increases the talent pool and the diversity that we all are. And accepting that with what I've learned from the people that came here originally just creates a pathway for a better society and a better community by bringing in not only other points of view, but new technologies that can make the world a better place.
Agreed. So I've been here 3 years now, and you know, one of the first conversations I had when I landed here was with someone of influence in the community, and they said to me, we don't have meetings here. We have conversations, and we build relationships. And past 3 years has been building those relationships, and I've met some wonderful people, and especially those folks that are moving here and bringing businesses here to North Texas. So it's been a great journey.
It is, and it'll continue to be one more. That's even more exciting. I go through a variety of influence groups that come to me, and at this point, I've got business leaders and a bunch of other politician types, because you have to work with legislature. No matter, you've heard the old thing, oh, politics is dirty business. I don't want to get my fingers, in that, but you've got to, and there are plus and minus on every side, and there's more than one. This is more like a circle than it is just two binary rectangles for one side or the other side. But when you get to the top, like in Dallas, It's a nonpartisan process to be able to pick up the left-behind communities and bring them into the 22nd century, if you will, through a different lens. And I was talking to an old buddy of mine, Jazz, about this. There's the old staid way of the Hatfield-McCoys. It's in our, especially here in the South. I mean, it's ingrained in the history. But the younger people that are coming up in positions of power, whether it's the city hall, politics, or business, think about it differently. They think that it's more about the goal than it is about the party. And I've found that it's a change never happens immediately. Sometimes there's abrupt pauses in it, but it's a growth rate there that is, it's a way of thinking that I see taking hold.
I would agree. From all of the venues that I work in, with all of the individuals that I work with, it's about building relationships, and it's about not just the task anymore. It's not just about the job. It's about the value that creates for all of us and the collaboration of our communities, because at the end, you know, we are all better together. And I think having those initiatives and having those new conversations is vital to our growth and continued welcoming of individuals here to North Texas and just the growth of our economy.
I think it's essential. If you can't talk to somebody, you're not going to get anything done.
True story. So, Michael, you've also built an internet protocol television, an IPTV, I believe is what it's called, network. And you also have a podcast that has an audience of over 5 million listeners. That is outstanding. Or you did.
I did.
Okay. So talk to us a little bit about that. What inspired you to enter the media landscape, and how can entrepreneurs leverage these types of tools to find their own audiences?
Well, there was a group of people that I got introduced to. My wife asked me to go be on a radio show, and I was speaking about trading futures on the radio show, but the show was about trading stocks, and they ended up liking what I was doing to the point of giving me my own show. So I was looking to expand into something else and a little bit bigger, and I found out about these crazy people. It looked like an anthill, Market News First, and they were cutting edge, just about 21 years ago, cutting edge video production. This is, I think Facebook was just getting started. LinkedIn hadn't been invented yet. And they were creating a television network that was focused on the internet. And at that time, people were just figuring out how to dial each other on their cell phones. But the pushback was, oh, nobody will ever watch TV on your phone. And I thought that was something like, you know, radio is a passing fad. So we moved forward with that. I started off with the financial show, Trading Currency Pairs. I don't know if you know what that is.
I do. I was in financial services prior to entering higher ed. So, but if you would like to explain it for our audience, or they have an understanding, that would be wonderful.
Okay. So you'll have a variety of currencies, British pound, you buy that and you sell the Japanese yen. And the difference between the sovereign yield, their treasury bonds, is either a negative and it pulls interest out of your account, or it's a positive. And so if you structure a portfolio, then you can have a positive interest income off of the difference between interest rates in countries represented by their currencies. And so I had a 20-pair portfolio with Delta Neutral receiving about 25% interest during that time when I was trading the portfolio, and I would teach people what my reasoning was on how to manage that portfolio. Then I traded my own futures account live, and that got a lot of fun because it was like a little casino. I would put up the platform, and people from Uruguay would pipe in, people from Moscow would pipe in, and they would watch me trade and discuss why I'm buying oil or selling corn or buying wheat in with the guest. And I would either agree or disagree. And when I put on the trade, the little triangle would pop up where I traded it. And so it turned out to be a lot of fun. Fast forward, I saw the landscape, the financial landscape out there, and I thought, you know, the next big move is going to be private equity. So why don't I talk about these small companies that have new innovative processes and technologies that can come to the market? So I had family offices throw $50,000, $100,000 into a small company, bring it to me. I would run them through the hard questions. Why are you better? How are you going to be sustainable? How are you going to scale? The normal stuff that any investment banker would ask. They give me their answers. And then I had a pool of viewers, which are mainly institutional viewers that would watch my show. So if they found something that they thought was scalable, fit their bylaws or their guidelines, then they would drop a million or two on it. And down the road we go. And I thought that was a great way to create more entrepreneurs and help other entrepreneurs with good ideas grow their businesses so that more people would be able to take advantage of what the brain trusts were bringing out in society at that time.
That's a fascinating story. So I'm going to skip around a little bit. We have a lot of students here at Tarrant County College and a lot of community members here who are aspiring entrepreneurs, currently have their businesses. We run a program called the Everyday Entrepreneur Venture Fund here that's focused on minority entrepreneurs in the county. I wonder, what advice can you offer to the students in Tarrant County or the individuals who are trying to get their businesses off the ground?
First, find your passion. Don't do it because somebody else thought it was a good idea. Make it your idea. Then find the smartest people you can to help you build what your passion is about and make sure that they have the same passion as you. Otherwise, you're going to find that your circle of friends is going to rotate in and out. You need to build a history with these people so that they and you can almost become intuitive when problems arise, because the biggest thing you're going to be when you grow up and build your business is a problem solver. And there has to be a way to communicate the issue with a solution in a group. Can't be an island.
That is for sure. You cannot be an island in any of this work. You have to do it together. So, Michael, tell us a little bit. You have a very inspirational mind to me in this space. Paint a picture of the workforce and economic landscape in the next 5 years from your purview.
We need to get to an inclusive economy instead of a competitive economy. So one of the things that I didn't bring up earlier about that template is to carve out in a community asset 3% ownership of the real estate and going through a process of introducing candidates to franchise model businesses. Carving out 3% of that franchise model. Example, I've got a project. Phase one in southern Dallas is 250 units, 1, 2, 3 bedrooms. But on the bottom of this five-story building are 70 storefronts. And I want to create an ecosystem where the stores down on the bottom will, either through digital technology, or I should say digital securities, or two forms of crypto. One is a utility crypto. Most young people who are listening to this understand what a utility crypto is, basically trade for services. And then the other is a security token. But to take that 3% ownership of the business and the real estate and spread it throughout the community that surrounds the community asset, so they have ownership in the businesses that are in the new community asset that they have, whether it's a grocery store, child care center, or it's a medical center, things of that nature. And then you could do business parks and things of that nature. But point being is, unless you have an inclusive community where people want to trade close to them with the other business owners that are in that community, you're going to have a competitive economy. And I think inclusive economies are the wave of the future. Get the community to buy. I mean, it's actually not a new idea. The Middle Ages, they only had one blacksmith. They had one of everything. And everybody had to trade with them because that's all they had for the next, till you move off to the next kingdom. But if you bring that to a community that owns and receives benefit from the ownership of not only the real estate, but the businesses in the real estate or surrounding the real estate, then that's going to be a way to get community buy-in and camaraderie with shop owners. That way you've got a blend of different age groups, but all with one common goal. We're going to profit. If I trade my token for dry cleaning for coffee, and then then the store owner trades it in for securities, and then the community can buy those too and earn them. They have these new concepts out, which I love. You take a picture of somebody picking up trash and you get a utility token. And you can trade that in for dry cleaning, Subway sandwich, and also in for the digital security or the securitized crypto coin. So I think, and I've already talked to Grant Thornton about this, because you have to, the biggest problem when you do this is you're going to have to worry about what's the valuation. Is everybody getting a fair share of what this is? And they go, you're talking about 5-employee franchises? Hey, we do, you know, General Mills. This is child's play. So, yeah, we can do that. So it's easily done.
It starts right with your community. Mm-hmm. So you have a special knack. And one of the things I really love about your work is that you're so community-based. What can we all do to make the most significant impact through community outreach?
That is a big question. What can we all do? Get involved. Just find something that is your niche and step up and get involved. Don't think, oh, somebody else is going to do it. I'll wait for that. Become a leader and get involved.
What's next for Michael Yorba?
Ooh, well, I have been approached by some people to help them work through all of the politics involved. One of the things that I found out by the just a side benefit of what I do is I learned to speak politician. And I was talking to the lieutenant governor a while ago, and I said, you know, I think I have something you need. And he looked at me like, first, who are you? And second, what could you possibly have that I need? I said, well, I work in communities that are primarily African-American, Latino, and gay. And that, unless I miss my guess, is the swing vote for you. And so there's a lot of power in being able to approach a legislator and say, look, I'm not saying that I'm going to have these people vote for you, but I am saying that if you work on a medical center and get in the photograph and try and help out the community, you might get them to listen to you. And that's a nonpartisan conversation. As it turns out, they kind of like that conversation. So next for me is getting into a place where we can streamline the processes, bring private business acumen to a public issue that bureaucracy has slowed down the process, zoning, permitting, some of the obvious ones, and being able to streamline public-private partnerships. And to do that, you've got to have everybody in the room working with each other. I was the one that they chose to go into the deepest, hardest part of a community that has longstanding feelings about being mistreated by people who don't look like them. And so when you get in that room and you're the only one in that room, they have a preconceived idea of who you are from everybody else that's been there before. So I've met other people, wealthy people, that said, I tried that, I'm not going to do it. You know what? You can't quit. You just have to go in and find out, where does it hurt? How can I help? And they will open up to you and talk to you. I've met the treasurer. I've met senators. I've met a lot of people who normally would have their arms and legs crossed and not talk to me. But if you don't fold, I'm helping your community. Oh, sounds like you're going to do it by yourself. Well, I am going to do this, but I can do it better with your help. If you approach it in that fashion, you'll tend to get more done than trying to be the smartest guy in the room and force your leadership on somebody that's really already had a bad experience with somebody else trying that same gig. So if the students are trying to find a pathway, it's engage the person on the other side of the table. And don't go at it with what you want. Find out what's important to them and then support that effort to resolve that issue, and you'll have a better path of communication and success.
If anyone in our listening audience wants to contact you, Michael, to learn more about this work that you're doing, how do they reach out?
Advance, ADVANCENTX.org, or just Google me. It'll come up.
Yes, and you have lots of videos on YouTube as well.
Thanks.
Certainly. Well, Michael, I want to thank you so much for being here today. I really appreciate having you on the show, and hopefully you can come back in the near future, and I look forward to additional conversations with you. So thank you so much, and I want to thank our audience for joining us today. We look forward to seeing you next time on the Workforce Lens.
Thank you.